Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to this 60th episode of Step Into the Light on this Tuesday morning, August 22nd. Thank you for listening. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. On this show, listeners learn about people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Child sexual abuse is a dark secret that occurs much too frequently in today's society. The damage it can cause is reflected in low self-esteem, poor social functioning, and relationship-building ability of its victims, and can follow them throughout their entire lives. Yet, sometimes the trials we face give us the strength and knowledge to lead others out of the same dark place. Lisa Radcliffe is one of many women who experienced child sexual abuse. She never thought she would share her experience publicly, but a dramatic turn of events changed her mind 30 years ago. Her decision back then led to her ministry to teen girls and women who share a history of abuse. Her goal is to help them find freedom from their past through the Word of God so they can experience the abundant life that Jesus promises. Lisa is a speaker, writer, and Bible teacher, and has volunteered in youth and women's ministry for over 30 years. Lisa loves playing and watching sports, cooking, shopping, writing, and is currently working on her first book. Good morning and welcome to the show, Lisa. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you for having me, Patty.
I'm not sure if you may have already spoken. I didn't turn on your mic. I'm sorry. I forgot that they automatically turn off your mic until I turn it back on. So if you spoke and I didn't hear you, I apologize for that.
My heart only stopped for a second.
Me too. It's wonderful to have you here on the show this morning, Lisa. It was a pleasure to meet you over there at the Greater Philadelphia Writers Conference, Christian Writers Conference, and you had quite an amazing story to share. But I usually like to start my interview asking folks, give us a little bit of insight into what your childhood experiences were that led you to your current career as a writer and a speaker.
Oh, wow. I guess I always liked writing, but if you had known me as a child, anybody who did would never believe I became a speaker. I was painfully shy. I had a few other careers in my life first. I homeschooled my kids for 14 years, and then I became an area coordinator in puppy development at the Seeing Eye and did that for 16 years. It was really that job that required a ton of public speaking that really honed my speaking skills, and I learned that I really like to do that. I really like connecting with an audience, and it was a great venue to do it because when you're talking to a group about seeing eye dogs, there's like no fear. I mean, everybody wants to hear what you have to say, and of course,
sure.
I always had an adorable puppy with me, so I could have said anything, and they would have been okay with it. But it really helped me to learn speaking, and it, whether it was a group of Girl Scouts or a big corporate event, it was just something that I found I loved to do.
I know, and I would love to talk to you more, Chris. That's not the focus of this show about the seeing eye, because my mom never needed a seeing eye dog, but actually she attended high school at the New York Institute for the Education of the Blind.
Mm-hmm.
In New York City. And we could go on and on about that, but that is certainly not the but I think it's really cool that you work with the seeing eye, and I'm sure that's a really neat job.
Yeah, it really
well,
is, and I still volunteer with them.
Yeah. Well, my mom used to work for a place called the Industrial Home for the Blind. No, I shouldn't say work. She volunteered, and we were kids. We'd go there. The thing that amazed me about those blind people was that they always played shuffleboard. That was the big game. And I'm not kidding you, those blind people would beat us sighted kids every time. It was pretty amazing. Lisa, you also teach the Bible, and I'm kind of interested to know, when did the Bible first capture your interest? Because there's a lot of young people that have a hard time getting into Bible reading and Bible study. So was this something that interested you when you were young, or did that occur later on in life?
Oh, it really happened all at once. When I was saved at 16, I just could not get enough of God's word. I just devoured it, usually very late at night, which in high school was probably not the best thing to do, but I'd find myself looking at the clock going, oh, I have to get up in a couple of hours. I better put this down. And then one of our Young Life leaders in high school had gotten a Bible. He didn't like it. It was a New American Standard Version, and he wasn't thrilled with it, so he offered it to me. And I took it, and it was also a study Bible, and I just poured myself into that, just loved it. In fact, I still have it, but it's falling apart now, so it just sits on my nightstand. I only use it once in a while. But it was really through reading God's word that I realized that Jesus' death on the cross didn't just cover my sin, but it covered my past. And that was very freeing for me. The verse in particular that I leaned toward was Galatians 2:20 that says, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. And that was really the verse that I realized I really was new and different and didn't have to be held by my past anymore.
Right. Well, I think that's pretty fascinating. You, I don't know, Lisa, I've read the Bible I don't know how many times, and like you, I just finished up a study Bible recently, but boy, I still have a hard time with the Old Testament. I love to read the New Testament stuff, but going through that Old Testament, I just don't understand some things about it, but I think it's fascinating to have people who can teach the Bible, because I'm not very
I really love to teach. Yeah, I love to teach God's word, and actually for me, the last couple of years, the Old Testament has really been a focus, because I was finding different books and helps that show Jesus through the Old Testament, and it really makes the New Testament even come alive even more.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lisa, you were a victim, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, of childhood sexual abuse.
Yes.
You swore that you would never share that in public. Tell us.
True.
Run us through what happened as much as you feel comfortable doing so, and what led up to you finally going public with this story.
Okay. After I was saved and got involved with the Young Life ministry at school and youth group at church, and life just went along really well. I got married, had my first son, and life was really perfect. And my past was like so far removed from me, it was like it happened to somebody else, like it was someone else's story. Mm-hmm. But then I think it was around 1987, I joined some women from my church that went on a retreat up to Word of Life. And one of the sessions that we went to was about letting go of resentment from your past. And I kind of had a hard time with that. I thought, well, I had every right to be resentful of some of the things that happened and the people that hurt me in my past. And I was struggling with that. And that night I talked with two of the women who had gone with us, two of my friends. For the first time, I told them about the abuse that I had suffered. And I'm not exactly sure when it started. I always say around 5 because it was one of my earliest memories, so I'm not really sure. But so somewhere between 5 and I know it ended at 15. And it was the first time that I talked to anybody outside of my husband about it. And their reaction was, well, it was shock, first of all, but the other thing they said to me was, if he's ever arrested, you know, you're going to have to tell your story to the police. And I said, well, that won't happen. My abuse had ended 10 years prior to that time. He had never been arrested up till that point. So I didn't see how that would ever be an issue. But that Monday morning, I got home, and you know, you're in that that post-conference stupor kind of thing.
Yes,
I just wanted
exactly.
to sleep in. And one of those friends who happens to be a morning person, and I'll forgive her for that, she called me way before 7 o'clock in the morning, and she said to me, she asked me if this person was who had abused me, and she said his name. And I said, yes, how did you know that? Because I didn't tell you a name. And she said, he's been arrested. It's in the newspaper. He was arrested over the weekend.
Oh, wow.
So I, you know, I just got the weak knees and dissolved into a puddle on the floor. And she said, you know, you need to talk to the police and let them know how long this has been going on. So my husband was still at home, and I asked him what I should do. And he said, why don't you talk to our pastor's wife about this and see what she thinks you should do. So that's what I did. But first, you know, it was still too early, I felt, to call anybody. So I thought, well, first I'm just going to sit down with my Bible. I was planning to start a new book study that day anyway. So I thought I might as well get into this now. And I opened my Bible to what that study was going to be, and it was on the book of 2 Corinthians. And if you're familiar at all with 2 Corinthians, the first chapter starts out, I'll just paraphrase it, it starts out with that you suffer things in order to comfort others who are suffering in the same way. And I got into an argument with God because I said, there is no way I'm sharing this in a public way. You know, there's just too many other things in my life that you could use, and it doesn't need to be this, and this is staying hidden away. But you probably are familiar with how arguments with God end up, you know?
Yeah.
He always wins those. So it probably was an hour later of a lot of arguing and praying and reading that chapter over and over again when I finally said, okay, God, if this is what you want to use, fine, but I still don't think it's a great idea. So later that morning, I went to the pastor's wife, sat down with her, told her the whole story, and she just sat there literally with her mouth open. And she said,
"No, I'm sure she was probably in shock.
I can't believe it," because by that time we had been at that church about 4 years, I guess, and we were involved with a lot of different things. And she said, "But you're so normal." And she did a lot of counseling, and she counseled a lot of women with similar stories. And she said, "They're not, you know, they're not in a good place. And how could you be so normal and have gone through this?" And that's when I told her that I really felt that when I was saved, God took away the hold of my past. It didn't have to control me at all. And
right.
There were definitely things that came out of it that I still would deal with for years to come, but it didn't have that hold that it did over a lot of people. So that's when she said she agreed with everyone else that I needed to talk to the police. And when I called them, they were very excited to talk to me because they really wanted to establish a history. This was his first offense, technically, as far as the courts were concerned. And their concern was that he was going to get off because the young woman who was a high school student, he was a bus driver, the young woman who brought the case didn't have a good reputation. And
okay.
he did have a good reputation in the community.
Sure.
Everyone knew him, you know, everyone liked him. And so that was where they were having a problem. And by the time I met with them, I found out from them that dozens of women had come forward covering decades, but they could only use two. They used me and one other person because we were the only ones who had our lives together.
Okay.
And I thought,
yeah,
isn't that
makes
a
sense.
Shame? You know, he's caused so much
destroyed
destruction in these women's lives. You know, and here are just two of us we're going to be able to use because it was going to be his character versus it was all based on character. It was our character,
sure.
the victim's character, and his character all working together to see where this was going to end up. And he did get convicted and sentenced to jail. He never thought he'd do any jail time. Fortunately, I did not have to testify in court. My written statement was enough. And but he ended up serving 2 months in jail.
And that's
so,
all.
That's all. So then I had to deal with some resentment again. But, you know, what happened was a few months after this all started, my husband and I were scheduled to share our testimonies in church. And our pastor said to me that he really wanted me to share that part of it. Now, this is 29 years ago right now. And I thought, this people are not going to be okay with this. And he really wanted me to do it, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. So I shared the testimony that I normally would have shared, and then at the end I just sort of tacked on that, you know, what I've left out is that for a big part of my childhood, I had been molested by a family friend, and that person was now on trial in another case, and just asked for prayer that, you know, how this was going to end up. I really didn't want to have to testify in court. And I just left it at that and closed up my time and sat back down and waited to see what would happen. And the reaction was really kind of shocking. Some people were really great and thanked me for what I shared. There was a police officer in our congregation that was so happy that I shared that and opened that door. But there were other people that I had known since we had started at that church, that didn't talk to me for 3 or 4 months afterwards. They just didn't know how to handle it. Some of them, I think, it hit a nerve, too, and they just, you know, it kind of sent them in a tailspin for a while. So the reactions were varied, and I wasn't prepared as I should have been for how negative some of them were. And I thought, see, Lord, I told you this was not a good idea. But
what do you think you're doing there, Lord?
I told you this would happen, but it really did open a lot of other doors. And in our ministry with youth, different kids would come my way that, you know, had suffered the same kind of things or were in it, and I was able to help them. And then other women, I was asked to talk to other groups, and it just sort of became that thing that I talk about. And even though I asked the Lord not to have that be the thing, that seems to be what he's decided is going to be my ministry.
Mm-hmm. When you were a child and all this was going on, Lisa, you say your family knew this person.
Yes.
Do you think any suspicions whatsoever?
Well, my dad, no. My parents were divorced. I lived with my mom. My dad was actually how we knew this person. They had worked together earlier in life, and he lived just a few blocks from us, so we saw him a lot. But my dad had no idea that this was going on. My mom, though, when I was probably 13, and the abuse went from just like him holding me against him when I was really small. And then it escalated to more than that as I got older. And it was at that time I was probably close to 14, and things I felt were getting really out of hand. I talked to my mom and I told her what was going on, but her reaction was that I misunderstood him, that he's just overly friendly and he's like that with everyone. And that was the end of the conversation. She just walked out of the room. And I don't know, to this day, I don't know if she really believed that or if it was too much for her to deal with as a single parent. You know, there was a lot going on in her life too. And so I don't really know. But at that point for me, that was just a door slamming shut. I really felt like the darkness was beginning to overwhelm me. And that was it. Mm-hmm. He had said for years, you know, for as long as I've known him, that adults knew about what he was doing and they didn't care. And for me, that solidified it, that he was right. Adults, when they know, they don't care. So I felt at that point that I was just really, this is just going to be my life. This is just what it is. So that was a really difficult time. And then things kind of got a little bit worse. And then at 15, there was one incident that I was able to get out of. But I felt like that one was going somewhere that we had never gone before. And I thought, this is it. My life is going to be over if I can't get out of this. And I did get out that day. And then the next day, he showed up at my house, which had never happened before. And he was on the other side of the screen door, which was locked at the time, and he was telling me he wanted me to go somewhere with him, and I don't remember what he said. At the time, I didn't really hear what he was saying. I was so scared. I was so sure that this is it. This is the day that my life is going to end one way or another. And all of a sudden, my sister's boyfriend, who was in the room, but he wasn't seen, you know, was at the other end of the room, he all of a sudden, he was standing between me and the abuser. And I don't know what he was saying either. My mind was exploding in other directions. And but I know it was very threatening. Whatever he was saying, it was very threatening. And the man turned and ran to his car and left. And then this young man turned around and he said to me, "He won't bother you again. And if he does, tell me, and I'll protect you." And that was the first time that I actually thought, maybe this isn't going to end the way I thought it was. Maybe there is protection here.
There is a way out, and somebody does actually care.
There is a way out, yeah. And that's when a lot of the psalms that I had been reading that talk about God being a rescuer and a protector and a fortress, and those kind of things really came alive. That, wow, maybe this is how this is going to go. Maybe I am going to be rescued from this. That happened very shortly after that last encounter, and that was the very last encounter with this man. He never touched me again after that day. And
yeah.
It was
shortly
after that about a year later, I guess, that I came to know the Lord and found all these wonderful verses and could look back and say, wow, he really did protect me, even though some really bad things happened.
Definitely. Yeah. So I just wonder, you know, when this occurs to a young person, how they must have an awful lot of, I would think, I mean, I don't know, but I would think that there would be a lot of resentment against the people around you that you expect to be protecting you, and they're not.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Like you talked about with your mom.
I had a lot of, you know, my mom and I actually had a pretty good relationship. We're very much alike in a lot of ways. But I definitely had a lot of resentment toward her because she failed to protect me. And just in my mind, she chose to look the other way. And that was really hard. And it wasn't until the day that I went to talk to the police. So I was probably 24 maybe. So it's probably 10 years after I first told her about this. And I went to her office where she worked and told her that I was going to the police that day, that she must have heard that this person had been arrested. And she completely fell apart. And I felt terrible. You know, we're at her office and here she's just sobbing. And she was devastated because she kept saying, "You told me." And it was hard. It was really hard. I didn't realize that it would affect her that much. And she was very, very sorry that she hadn't done anything. And she expressed that and asked for forgiveness. And I did forgive her. And our relationship changed after that, for sure. That we had always been pretty close. But after that, I really didn't hold any resentment anymore. I was able to let that go. And we had a new respect for each other too. And so that was great. And it was funny because my kids, which I think is a wonderful thing, they remember her as a great mom. And I said, yeah, she wasn't the greatest mom in the world, but she was a great mom. And a lot of that is because that was the change that happened at that time. When that happened, my oldest son was 2. And, you know, and then 2 more sons came along after that. And so she was such a great grandmom to them. And I love to watch that because that was something I really didn't have growing up, was that relationship with her.
Yeah. And I can imagine that as a child, too, a person would live with a fear constantly.
My life was totally
making an appearance in your life.
Oh, yeah. I was afraid of everything. If there, If there was something to be afraid of, I was afraid of it. That was a huge part of my life.
Well, thank you for sharing so much of that with us, Lisa, because it's a very difficult topic and it's not easy
You're
to talk about. And I certainly appreciate you coming on the show and doing that. I'm going to take what I call a short break right now. And that is basically to make listeners aware of what they are listening to, because we have some folks that come into a Blog Talk Radio show and perhaps they missed the beginning and the introduction and they are not quite sure who they're listening to or what the show is about. So this morning you are tuned in to Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. I am very blessed to have guest Lisa Radcliffe here today. Our subject is childhood sexual abuse. Lisa is a victim of childhood sexual abuse. She was never going to share that story in public, she didn't think. However, she did go to the police when her abuser was arrested on another case several years later, and her testimony was enough to get the abuser jail time. So she has been sharing that story with us. Lisa is a speaker today and a writer, and she is a Bible teacher, and we've talked a little bit about that. We've talked about her experience and excuse me, goodness. And for the rest of the show, we'll talk about how God has worked in her life to enable her to bring her message to others and be a healing instrument to other people. I do want to make listeners aware that Lisa has a new blog that she just started. We'll talk about that toward the end of the show if we have time, and you will find the link to that on my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com. And those of you who are already familiar with the website are going to learn that in about a day or two, when I tell my webmasters to set it to go live, you'll find things are quite different and much easier to access. So you'll find Lisa's information there, and I think you'll find that it's really easy to navigate. So that's where you'll find that information about Lisa. So let's get back to what we were talking about here. Lisa, you've told us your story. So now you work with teens, you work with women with an abuse background. So share with us a little bit about how the dynamic of how you help these ladies and young people through this trauma.
Well, it's funny. I don't specifically work or target teens and women with abuse issues, but as I talk about it, they come to me. That's been a real joy for me, especially with the teens. I love my teens. I've worked with them for 35 years. I said my next book is going to be something funny. So instead of something so heavy, and I was thinking maybe it should be youth ministry. The first 25 years are the hardest. After that, they really don't expect much. You know, they don't want you to play the games because you might break a hip. And if you bake brownies and laugh at them, they're good with that. So, but the teens, I still love to be around them. And I really love when they open up to me. And I try to share this story in the group setting with them at least every 4 years. So I'm hitting the high school kids at least once while they're there. And this past year was the year that I did that. And I did that, I guess, in March. And the response was really great. Some of them who've known me for a long, long time had no idea. And I said, you know, guys, we kind of have a joke at our church about my shoes. I love my shoes, and I have lots of them, and they're really awesome. And I said, if all that you can tell by looking at me from the outside is that I have great shoes, I'm okay with that. I don't want these scars to show. Because God really has done an amazing work. And so they all thought that was awesome, awesomely funny. But they got to see another side of me that they don't normally see. And it opened up some doors, as it always seems to do. And I was able to talk to some of the girls who were struggling, not necessarily as victims of abuse, but had gotten into some other things, because I talk about, when I talk to teens in particular, but definitely with women too, there's things that come from being abused, from being awakened sexually too early, that then teens, young women, old women will struggle with. It might just be an interest in other sexual things or pornography or something like that. And so when these people will open up to me because I've bridged it, you know, I've already opened the door, now they feel like, oh my gosh, somebody really does understand what I'm going through. And so that happens a lot. And I do get to talk to women and say, look, you can have freedom from this. It does not have to have a hold on your life. And I point them to scriptures like Romans 6 and Colossians 3, where, you know, it talks about our bodies. It talks about new life and putting off the old and putting on the new, and that there are actual biblical steps you can do to find freedom from this. And it doesn't have to control you. Because I think a lot of women feel like, this happened to me, so this is who I am because of it. And you don't need to stay there. Christ promises to make you a new creation, and he can take all that old and get rid of it. And one of the, another youth leader that I heard this year, she was saying that it's in Micah that God says our sins are in the depths of the ocean, that God crushes them and puts them in the depths of the ocean. And I love that symbolism, because that's somewhere that even as human beings, we've never been. We've been to the moon, but we've never been to the complete depths of the ocean. And we couldn't go there because we'd be crushed. And that's, you know, the picture of what he does with our past, I think, when we become a new creation in him.
Yeah, very good. Do some of your young, your people that you deal with, Lisa, and, well, even in yourself, tend to feel or felt at the time that this whole thing was their fault?
Yes. I think the biggest thing that people deal with is the shame of it. First, you don't want to talk about it with anybody, but just the shame, because most children who have been abused have been told that it's their fault, that they've done something that causes this abuser to act the way he does. And as a child, you know, child believe adults. They believe adults are telling the truth. So it just makes sense to them, especially when, like people who had my situation where there, you tried to tell an adult and they didn't do anything or didn't think it was a big deal, you know, that stuff just becomes reality, that I guess they're telling me the truth. This is my fault. Or this is normal, that everybody does this. There's a lot of lies that are told that children will believe, especially when they're told over and over and over again. So shame and that stuff is the biggest stuff, that, the problem that people deal with. And the one thing that I tell people every time is, if you don't listen to anything else I have said today, just hear one thing. If you're a victim of childhood sexual abuse, it was not your fault. And that's a message that we can take to the secular world in you know, schools and things where we might not be able to share the love of God and the freedom in Christ. We can still tell children and adults, too, that this was not your fault. And that will go a long way in helping them.
Yeah, it will. I would think so, because, yeah, kids are, you know, especially young people, young teens are told. You know, and I agree that there is a certain dress code, but still, you know, young teens are told, you know, if you didn't look so good out there on the basketball court or whatever, you know. And it's difficult, too, when you have a person like you mentioned that this man was well respected in his community.
Right.
So
he was someone everyone knew because of the position he had in the community. And he was a deacon in his church. He was, you know, the guy that everybody knew and was very friendly. It had a friendly reputation. And people liked him. There was, at one point, I saw a newspaper article that he was bus driver of the month, and they had a picture of him on the cover of the newspaper, on the front page of the newspaper. And one of the comments was that he had nicknames for all the little girls on his bus. And I thought, really? Nobody else sees this? Is it just me?
Yeah, really.
You know, I don't know. I don't know if people did see it and ignored it, or if it was just a denial thing, like, no, it couldn't be him. He's Mr. Nice Guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, and that was a job he had after he had retired from his other job. So, you know, I warn people all the time that pedophiles are wherever children are, and they are
yes.
in your church. They are in your community. For me, at the community pool, you know, and most adults are like my husband and I. We love kids. We love working with teenagers, and we're perfectly normal, healthy people. But there are others out there that are not that, and you need to be aware of who your kids are interacting with and what those interactions are like.
Yep, exactly. Well, Lisa, you're currently working on your first book, so tell
yeah.
us about it.
Well, a few years ago,
adventure.
I met Carolyn Rook. I don't know if you know Carolyn. She's got a wonderful organization called the Rise and Shine Movement, and it's about child prevention of childhood sexual abuse. And she's got a few books out for kids, her kids' books. And I met her at something, and we got talking, and I told her my story. And she said, you should write a book. And I said, people have said that before, but I'm not really sure. And she said, you should, and you should do it from this perspective of the heroes in your life. Because as we talked about it, and as I've gained perspective, which translates that I've gotten old, I've realized that
I'm right there with you.
There were at very strategic parts of my life, there were men that God placed there. And I think that he did that to keep me from slipping completely into that darkness.
Mm-hmm.
The first was my dad. Even though I didn't live with my dad, he was never far away. And he was just a wonderful, kind, gentle soul. And, had a great relationship with him, and I always felt safe around him. So it starts with him, and then I had a elementary school teacher that I was terrified of in the beginning, but I realized that he completely changed how I viewed men because of how he was as a teacher. I had the opportunity actually to go back to his class 30 years later to talk about seeing eye dogs. And first of all, he couldn't believe I was a public speaker because I was so shy when he had me. But he was about to retire. He was going to teach one more year and then retire. And this is several years ago. And I realized when I went that day, the school was still the same. He was still teaching at the same school in the same grade. And I wondered, how many kids has this man saved because of his character, you know, of who
mm-hmm.
he is, what a great teacher he was. But anyway, there were other people along the way that rescued me. My sister's boyfriend was one of them. So I'm writing this
yes.
book, and I'm doing it as sort of a hero and villain kind of thing, and really bringing out how I think God had certain people in my life to rescue me at certain times so that I didn't slip completely away into the darkness. And what Carolyn was telling me was, I've never seen an abuse book from that perspective before. So that's how I'm doing it. And it's been really challenging and a lot of work, but it was well received. What I took to the writers' conference was very well received. Different publishers and people liked the perspective that I was doing it from. And they also said they've never really seen anything from that perspective. So we'll see where it goes. It's probably just over halfway done, so I'm hoping to finish it by the end of the year, so we'll see.
Well, wonderful, Lisa, and that it's going to make it stand out above the rest, and that's what you're looking for among the, what is it they say, something like 450,000 books that get published every week.
Right.
You want to have that fresh view, and it sure sounds like you have found that in this particular subject, so wish you the very, very best with it.
Thank you.
And you also started a blog, and that's always fun. So tell us a little bit about what the focus is of that.
Oh, yeah, this is something I've wanted to do for a while, but I am definitely technologically challenged.
Okay.
So
yeah, well, I've been there.
I have put it off, but my writing buddies have been after me to do it. So they're like, come on, you've got to get out there. You've got to start writing some of this stuff down. So I finally did it last week. I started the blog, and I'm calling it People, Puppies, and Parables, Seeing God in the
Love
Everyday.
That name.
Because I think sometimes we miss that, hey, that was God, and
yes.
You just missed it. So I'm trying to bring out those things. So hopefully it's going to be a little bit on the lighter side of life, I think. And I think anytime I promise people puppies, then they'll listen to me. So this first one actually was focusing on the Seeing Eye, and they just had a big event last Saturday that I was at, and so some of the lessons that I've learned from them, and it has a couple puppy pictures, and one of my current puppy in there. And we've raised 22 puppies for the Seeing Eye as a family.
Oh,
so we
my.
Have a ton of stories.
Oh, I bet you
to
do.
Tell.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, but my other thing that my children growing up really got sick of hearing this, but I would say all the time that life is about relationships. And if you don't know of anything else to do, have a relationship with somebody. So the people part of that is going to be some of the relationships that I have and some of the funny stories and maybe some serious stories that have come out of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a really fun blog, and I'll definitely follow it, and I'll put it up here on my website so that folks can refer to it, Lisa. So I'm excited for you. It's always a fun adventure.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it.
Would you repeat again, though, what was the tagline? People, Puppies, and Parables, but what was the looking for
Seeing
God?
Seeing God in the Everyday.
Seeing God in the Everyday. Yeah, because I feared that maybe I had spoken over you, which I have a habit of doing, and that people didn't hear that. So I wanted to make sure that our listeners heard that, Lisa. Well, as much as I regret to say this, it is about time to wind down our show. So I wanted to ask you before we leave, did you have anything else that you would like to add?
Oh, my goodness. No, I think you did a great job directing
the
questions.
Oh, I think you did a great job.
I'm sure there is so much more, but, you know, people can get in touch with me. I'm happy to speak at women's events, teen events, wherever I can be of help to a church or ministry group. I'm thrilled to do it. So, yeah, let me know if I can be of help.
Great. And how can people reach you?
Probably my email is probably the best way to do it, which is Lisa
okay.
J. Radcliffe.
Okay, and I'll get that from you, and we'll put it on the website, Lisa. Because nobody's
right,
going to remember it. So
yeah.
That's why I put that information on that site.
And they'll probably spell it wrong anyway.
Yes, and see, like I almost did. I almost put that E on the end. I was glad you made me aware of that.
Everybody wants to make us fancier Radcliffe than we are.
That's funny. Well, it's been a pure pleasure having you on the show this morning, Lisa. Like I said earlier, I know this is a very difficult topic to bring out into the public, and you have done a wonderful job of doing that and of sharing your heart, and I just want to thank you so much for being here.
Oh, well, thank you, Patty. It was great to meet you several weeks ago, and this has been a great opportunity.
Well, it's been wonderful, and may God continue to bless you in your ministry and with writing of your book, and you and I will definitely keep in touch.
Okay, great.
All right, goodbye now.
Bye.
Listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Don't forget to check out Lisa's blog. I'll have that up on my website, which will be, like I say, a whole new format here in just a day or so. So I urge you to go to pattysheene.com. That's P-A-T-T-I-S-H-E-N-E.com. Look forward to seeing you back with us. next week. I know there have been several weeks that I haven't been doing a live broadcast, and it's been due to the fact that I was away and I had technical problems with my computer and problems with my internet connection, and everything went haywire there for a while. But I thank listeners for sticking with me and for listening to the archive shows when regular shows were not available. And from now on, we should have some brand new shows. So thank you for your support. God bless you all.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a glare.